missionary said, I have something if you really need it. No, that's okay. So, well, I want to welcome everybody and to our joint elected officials meeting today. We've got a couple topics on the agenda. And so before we get started, we'll ask our host here to open up or officially open up the meeting. So I'll open up the Lane County Board of Commissioners for estates. What is it, Thursday? June 6th, or not June, September 6th. We're here at the Carmichael Room. So, Mayor Piercy and Mayor Lumber.
Got a little that summer thing going here.
I want it to last.
I'll open up the Springfield City Council meeting.
And I'll open up the Springfield City Council meeting.
So I think before we get started, I think maybe the most important thing we have to kind of think about in our minds, is it pronounced Mariota? Or Mariota. So, because we're going to be hearing that name for a while, and
probably right about that.
So, anyway, it was funny listening to the announcers because they were all over the board on it. So, I'm looking forward to what he and his family actually have to say about it. So, anyway, with that, we'll move right into the first topic: Regional Prosperity Economic Development Plan. And we want to welcome Mike Solomon.
Thank you. And this is a little odd, but I have to run a slideshow, so I'm going to sit down. It's kind of like theater in the round. Yeah. Might be Shakespeare. I hope I don't get killed. Anyway, good afternoon. Today what we're going to do is give a brief overview of actions that have been taken and things that are underway to implement the Regional Prosperity Economic Development Plan. Let's see how this works. See? Work. Work. I want the slides to go forward, which I can't. Yes. We'll also discuss the relationship between the implementation work that's going on for economic development and the ongoing work of the Lane Livability Consortium. I'll start off with a few comments, and then Robin Scott from the Lane Workforce Partnership is with us to review the work on the Work Ready Communities Initiative, which is connected with the implementation of the overall plan. So, moving forward. You'll recall that the JEO took action to adopt the Regional Prosperity Economic Development Plan in 2010, and the plan focuses on three ambitious and fundamentally important goals. The first is the creation of 20,000 jobs by the year 2020. Second is to reduce the regional unemployment rate to a level that's equal to or lower than the average rate for the state. And the third is to increase the average regional wage to a point equal to or above the average wage for the state. The plan focuses on six strategies to get us there: growing local opportunities, working with the creative economy, investing in tomorrow's talent, providing for the basic needs of business, identifying as a place to thrive, which is an economic identity goal, and strengthen key industries. I should note that the regional plan, its goals and strategies, have been incorporated into the work plan of the Lane Livability Consortium. So as we move forward with the implementation of the consortium's work, this work is incorporated in. And as we start, I want you to remember that this plan was based on a partnership model. So today we're not just talking about programs and initiatives of the two cities and the county, but also a broader group of very vital partners, as really an attempt to align the work of many parties in this regional community around commonly held economic outcomes. Excuse me. So let's just jump right in. First strategy is growing local opportunities, and you can think about this as providing for the needs of small business. Two things we heard very clearly at the regional summit that we held just before the adoption of the plan was a need for easy to find and one-stop information. And secondly, the need for access to capital. With the leadership of LCC and the Eugene Chamber, working together with the cities and the county and other partners, we collectively put together the Lane Business Link. It's a 24/7 integrated business assistance site. It's already served the needs of hundreds of folks who are looking for business assistance and information. The site used an established platform, it's a commercial product, but then was customized to highlight those things which are available in terms of resources and assistance in our region. Also very important, it was customized to reflect the region itself. this may be one of the first stops that someone visits if they're looking to relocate a business to this community or invest in this community, and we want this calling card to have a regional stamp on it. The partners are marketing the site to improve the traffic on the site and making continuous improvements. There's some other good things going on with respect to business assistance services. The Eugene Chamber, picking up on the strategy of the overall plan, instituted its own regional prosperity initiative. The RPI, as they call it, is funded by a combination of chamber resources and donations from the private business community. The Chamber's RPI program focuses on business retention and expansion. Think about this as an ombudsman function. Working with companies that build on the strengths of this region and focusing on entrepreneurship and innovation. These initiatives kind of cross between strategies. I'll talk a little bit more about the entrepreneurship and innovation aspect of RPI in a few minutes. Well, there's a slide missing. What do you know about that? What this slide should talk about is actions that have been taken by the RPI. Since its inception in 2010, the Chamber has worked with 163 companies to solve issues related to either starting a business, locating a business, or expanding one. And these actions have impacted over 1,000 jobs in the community, either creating jobs or retaining. Another thing that we heard at the regional summit, very important thing, was access to capital as a limiter on growth. This has always been an issue, but in this economy, with the strictures that are on the banking community, it's an even greater issue these last few years. Both LCOG and the City of Eugene provide financing assistance to new and expanding companies to support growth and the creation of jobs. This has been a very active 2 years for both of these programs. Eugene's programs, which are kind of pictorially here, concentrate on small working capital and equipment loans. So small loans that pay back relatively quickly. And the funds represented by the City of Eugene have had their two largest years in the history of those funds. City's business development and downtown programs have loaned $3.4 million since February of 2010. These loans have been matched by investment totaling $19 million. That goes to the point that we're a relatively small piece of very large loan packages. And the loans that have been put in place are scheduled to create 213 jobs in manufacturing, technology, and downtown commercial businesses. LCOG's programs. During that same period, loaned a whopping $11.5 million. Now, LCOG focuses on larger real estate development loans, either the construction of buildings, acquisition of property, or the renovation of large buildings. Their financing is a larger piece of an individual package. Typically, their financing was matched by $11.6 million in private financing and funding, and is connected with the creation of 194 jobs. Clearly, business growth and creation over the last couple years have been significantly fueled by publicly supported finance programs. Moving on to the second strategy, energize the creative economy. Creative startups, university spin-offs, and production and product innovation have long been strong assets of this region. Becoming a magnetic hub for these types of companies could support strong wage growth in the area and create a very positive economic identity for the region. Thanks to the emerging Silicon Shire, which some of you may have seen online, the understanding of the industry, networking between companies, and the marketing of the area as a tech location are all very much on the rise. With 161 companies already on the map, so to speak, and the number increasing, the Shire is on its way to creating a really interesting tech-centered brand for the community. In any case, this is an instance of private industry partnering to support regional goals around economic development and job growth. As promised, back to the Chamber's program, the RPI. That program works on the creative economy in three distinct initiatives: the SmartUps program, the Willamette Angel Network, and the SmartUps Academy. SmartUps is supporting emerging companies with education, networking, and mentoring. Organized as pub talks, is what you see here, SmartUps convenes industry groups in technology, research, and other specialty fields. These pub talks have attracted over 1,000 participants throughout the region. part of that pub talk programming is devoted to investment pitches. So companies actually get experience structuring investments and making pitches or sales approaches to the group. And this work feeds right into the Willamette Angel Network. The Willamette Angel Network creates a local network of small venture capitalists and investors. Right now there are 66 investors in the network, and that's been accumulating over the last 4 years. The conference gives businesses the opportunity to meet investors and to present themselves, their businesses, and make a pitch for investment. The central event of the conference is a venture competition. Local companies have won that competition 2 of the last 3 years, which is really good for this area. These are chamber initiatives, but they are supported in part by a small contract with the City of Eugene. Startups Academy basically takes this whole endeavor to the next level. It's a more intensive approach to launching and expanding companies. This program is funded in significant part through a contract with the City of Eugene. It's provided intensive training, monitoring, and networking, and incubation to a small class of rapid growth potential companies. There were just 5 businesses that came through that program in the first graduating class. Prospects look really good for at least one of those companies, and we're watching the outcomes of this pilot very closely. This sort of approach has been used in other communities, can be a very effective tool for launching tech-related companies particularly. It is a form of incubation, and incubation is also a topic of perennial interest. There have been 2 incubator projects underway over these last couple of years. NEDCO has established the Hatch Incubator in downtown Springfield. This is a physical location that houses 3 to 4 businesses at a time. Hatch is in their first phase, has been working with retail and some commercial service businesses. Going forward, they expect to focus on food-related businesses, social enterprise, green businesses, retail services, and arts and culture. Over in Eugene, the Broadway Commerce Center, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, is a redevelopment project that was financed by the City of Eugene, and it's providing small format flex space that is housing an impressive list, and the list is right there, of small tech companies and startups. That idea of flex space in itself is a form of incubation, but also included in the Broadway Commerce Building is the Code Chops business, which is a collaborative workspace for independent software developers, first of its kind in this area, and a way to incubate collaboration and the development of ideas. Very exciting prospect. Moving on to the fourth strategy, needs provide for the basic needs of businesses. This strategy in the plan focused primarily on infrastructure and regulation and providing adequate sites for the development and expansion of business. Both Springfield 2030 and Envision Eugene are addressing the adequacy of commercial and industrial properties and inventories as they go forward. In the case of Envision Eugene, the key industries included in the regional plan have been used as fundamental criteria for examining the supply and configuration of available industrial sites. Another important part of this strategy is inventory, to inventory available property and to activate underdeveloped sites. To advance this goal, Eugene, Springfield, where'd it go? There it is. Eugene, Springfield, and Lane County applied as a coalition to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for a brownfields inventory and assessment grant. We have applied, this is our 3rd time out as the City of Eugene. The first 2 times we struck out spectacularly, and we were told we were going to do so on our 3rd attempt. And 2 things were really assets in this case. First, the idea of creating a regional coalition with an economic development plan that supported the idea of brownfields redevelopment. But perhaps more important, the Lane Livability Consortium provides a template for not only regional partnership, but federal partnership. And this was really a path to move forward. We've received approval of a $680,000 award. This money will be used to conduct level 1 assessments and limited level 2 assessments. That work is expected to begin in all 3 jurisdictions in early 2013. Moving on, quickly, identifies a place to thrive. This is an economic identity strategy. The focus is to build the image of the region as a place to start a business or a new home for a business that's relocating. Positive economic identity can also be really crucial in maintaining a strong workforce, particularly in attracting and retaining younger workers. Building on the regional theme of track town, lifestyle, connection to the outdoors, the county has taken the lead on supporting the expansion of the regional food industry. Food is a significant industry in the region. It also has strong positive lifestyle associations and really supports a positive economic identity. Prosperity Plan also highlighted the importance of vibrant urban centers. Both Eugene and Springfield have been working hard on downtown development issues. Springfield has adopted a downtown design plan. They're working hard on redevelopment of buildings. There they are. And there's been recent investments in a brew pub and an arts academy. NEDCO is working in downtown Eugene. They're redeveloping a recycled church into a year-round farmer's market and a commissary kitchen. Downtown is among the prime focuses for Springfield's Year of Sustainability with the University of Oregon, very much a focus. Over in Eugene, downtown has seen a strong wave of investment over the last couple of years. Eugene has used federal loans, bonds, and subsidized land transactions to provide about $21 million in support for $100 million in new investment. LCC, the Inn at the Fifth, Broadway Commerce Center, the Woolworth Building, Park Place Apartments, and the redeveloped Taco Time Building collectively have begun to change the face of downtown. City has also provided about $725,000 in financing to support businesses to infill these and other spaces in the downtown. Belly, Noisette, a bakery, Off the Waffle, Barn Light, Bijou Metro, Jazz Station, and other businesses coming to the downtown will help create a very vibrant pedestrian situation long into the evening and support the downtown's role as an arts and cultural center. Along the way, downtown, this work in the downtown has created 466 commercial construction jobs, providing a needed boost to an important and hard-hit part of the labor market. We're also on schedule to bring 300 new residents into the downtown core. Moving on to the last strategy, well, the last one, except the one I skipped, the targeted industries and strengthen key industries, which is a targeted industry notion. The industries that were selected for the plan were originally based on the research findings of the Workforce Partnership. These types of firms are statistically more inclined to come to our area, and they have a wage profile that is significantly in excess of the regional average. Focusing our efforts on these industries could represent real opportunities for growth in average wage. We are currently working on a cluster analysis to better understand the industries, identify opportunities, and any specific actions that the jurisdictions could take to support industry growth. We started with the education, IT, knowledge creation cluster. It's a group composed of software development companies, software publishing, computer gaming, and education research and application firms. Very interesting group of companies. Cluster analysis, which is complete in draft, goes beyond the typical quantitative look and is supported with almost three dozen industry interviews to get more qualitative insights into how the cluster is structured, how it operates, and what our opportunities for growth might be. Work on the regional food cluster is well underway, accelerated by a broadly distributed survey developed by the Workforce Partnership in the county. Survey findings have been further supported by focus group work. The regional food cluster analysis should be completed, I'm told, by the end of September. Work is just beginning on a couple of other analyses in specialty manufacturing and biomedical. Again, this work has been integrated into the work plan of the Lane Livability Consortium. Cluster analysis findings will be reviewed by the consortium partners, the project management team for Lane Livability, and the leadership team as it's completed. Recommendations for policy actions, program development, or actions in partnership will come forward through that process. And then come up back to the JEO or to the individual jurisdictions as is appropriate. So this is a lot of work. It's kind of a complicated thing to get through quickly. I've given you a handout that has these slides as well as a matrix which breaks the actions and collates them with individual plan strategies. A lot of this stuff crosses over between strategies, but we've done the best we can to pigeonhole it. There's a significant partnership, active public partnership underpinning this. As you've seen, there's a very active private partnership underpinning this work as well. I'm gonna turn things over to Robin Scott. Robin's here with, from the Workforce Partnership. She's gonna talk about the Work Ready Community Program, and that relates to strategy number 3, invest in tomorrow's talent.
Able to attend, so I'm here in his stead. I think we can, oh, do I just push the, how do I get to the, okay. So I'm going to talk about a workforce development initiative that aligns well, actually with the majority of the regional prosperity plan strategies. It's called a Work Ready, we're calling it the Work Ready Lane County Initiative. And it is based on a concept of becoming a certified work-ready community, and I'll talk a little bit about what that means. So, what is a certified work-ready community and who certifies them? You may be familiar with ACT, that's the Scholastic Testing Center that your kids or you may recall taking the ACT. They have developed a standardized test called the National Career Readiness Assessment, and it tests applied skills in math, reading, and locating information, and that means finding information in graphs and tables. And what's unique about it is that it's applied skills, so it's all in the context of work. It's not just a straight academic exercise. So the certificate is recognized in 30 states, but at this point, only a few are pursuing a concept called becoming a certified work-ready community. And that means testing a percentage of our job seekers, our youth, and our current workforce with this National Career Readiness Certification Assessment. And once we have reached that benchmark, then ACT will certify our community. So we are ahead of the game as far as Lane County. You can see Oregon is the only state in the Northwest or in the West Coast that is pursuing this. Lane County is one of the first regions within Oregon that is pursuing this. And my goal is to make Lane County the very first region in Oregon to be certified as a work-ready community. And we'll lead the way. So looking forward to your support in that endeavor. There are many economic development advantages to becoming a certified work-ready community. It does demonstrate that commitment to a skilled workforce. It becomes part of our brand, part of our shared identity. It's a competitive advantage in business retention and recruitment. Basically, it says we are a community that is investing in our workforce, and we actually have quantifiable results to show what the skill level of our workforce is. And I'll show you shortly that it has been shown to reduce turnover and training costs among businesses. So Oregon's initiative was, National Career Readiness Initiative was launched by Governor Kitzhaber in 2011. And we've been administering the testing in our WorkSource Lane centers now for about a year. So far, we have about 1,300 laid off workers, we call them dislocated workers, that have received a certificate. And we have 63 businesses that have signed on to prefer the certificate in hiring, and that's really key. And examples of some of the local companies that prefer this certificate and use it as part of their screening process are Safeway, Forest Paint, Oregon Community Credit Union, Feeney Wireless, Advanced Energy Systems, the Hilton, and many others. So those that prefer the NCRC in hiring have already found that they're experiencing lower turnover rates and reduced training time to reach productivity. And one of the return on investment studies in Illinois found a 40% decrease in the cost of new hires that went through this National Career Readiness Assessment process. There are 4 certificate levels that a person can achieve when they are testing. What ACT did is it correlated these different skill levels, the basic skills required for various occupations. They surveyed 17,000 occupations. So you can see that if someone tested a bronze, that's the lowest level, then they have the basic skills required for 35% of jobs, and then all the way on up to the platinum level, which is very rare. I guess if you want to be a neuroscientist or a really high-level occupation, hopefully you'll be testing at a platinum level. One of the things we do is we do administer a pretest. So we make sure that the person who's taking this test will be successful at one of those levels. If we identify someone with extremely low basic skills, we have remediation services available to help bring them up. So this is another way to kind of screen, give people a reality check about where their skills are and how they measure up related to various occupations, and gives them the incentive and resources to then skill up to that level. This is what a National Career Readiness Certificate looks like. And we are really excited. We are going to be piloting the NCRC Plus, and that includes then a work ready or soft skills component. Oops, I don't know where that happened. I didn't touch anything, I swear. The soft skills component will test in four areas: work discipline, teamwork, customer service, orientation, and managerial potential. And we really think that this is going to increase the business buy-in, because when we talk to employers about this certification, they really want to know where people are with the technical basic skills, but they also really want to know about work readiness and where is this person with their values and soft skills as they relate to the job. So we're excited to be piloting that. So we've got a lot ahead of us. We have 2 years to meet these benchmarks. We need an additional 264 businesses to sign on to prefer the National Career Readiness Assessment in their hiring. And you will be seeing a Hire Work Ready campaign that Lane Workforce Partnership will be spearheading to spread the word about the advantages of testing and to get more employer testimonials and get employers on board. We will also be wanting to test an additional little over 2,000 job seekers. We'll be testing youth for the very first time, and this is also really exciting because it will give, say, a graduating high schooler an actual certificate that will be recognized by the business community when they leave high school. And then we'll also be doing testing current workers. And some businesses have already used the test when they're considering doing a promotion, and they have several candidates. They'll use this NCRC assessment as a means to determine who is the best candidate for that promotion. So I'm hoping you'll all join me in supporting this initiative, and that we'll receive the distinction of being the very first work-ready community on the West Coast. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and two great presentations. So I think at this time, we'll just open the floor up if there's questions of either Mike or Robin. And Mayor Piercy.
Real appreciation for the amount of effort that's going into the Regional Prosperity Plan and moving us all forward together. I think when we started on this journey, we all felt the pain of the recession in particular, and thought that we needed to put our mutual muscle together to get as much as we could for our broader community. And I think we've seen some real progress here. We have more coming our way. So I just really want to acknowledge and appreciate that. And then I wanted to ask if we might think about asking our school districts to be part of this. I know they already are sort of through the workforce partnership, but I'd like to see their symbols up there on the list of partners. I think what we really want is for our kids to be ready for the job market and to move forward. So whatever it takes for us to move in that direction, I really would encourage us to have that happen. And then at some point, I'd also like to suggest that when the timing is right, we think about having a sort of summit too on this, and do another kind of assessment of where we are and where we need to push more. Kind of keeps us all focused on it. And I think it's also really important for us to use this as an opportunity through our newspapers and other media to talk to our public about the effort that's underway from all of us to try to bring jobs and opportunity into our community. So those are the things that this makes me think about. I'm just really pleased, but I see it just opens the door to more and more things we could and should do to keep this rolling and growing for our community. It's the first time in I don't know how long I've really felt like we're on the move. We're not just a rolling back move. We're really moving forward together, and I appreciate it.
Well, before I go to Betty, is there any objection from the group about adding the school districts, I think, as partners? And then what we might be able to do is go back respective bodies and ask our administrators maybe to sit down and talk about this more. But I think that's the first thing is right now, you know, on this day, is there any objection for as far as adding our school districts as our partners? So then I think it's up to our respective bodies maybe to go back and then formally ask that. And so, good. So Betty?
Thank you. The schools are the most important part, actually, for the kind of economic development that would make a good community. And a good educational system is absolutely number one. And for if we want, I've heard people from the medical community say they can't get, it's difficult to get doctors, the top doctors, to come to town if they don't have a good school system. University, it's difficult to get the top professors if they're people who have children. So it's absolutely crucial to the kinds of industry, the kinds of jobs that might make a strong community. I have a couple of questions. What are key industries, this is for Mike, and the other one is, what is advanced manufacturing?
Councilor, key industries were included in the plan, and not having my notes in front of me, I'll try to get them all. Clean tech, which is a...
Oh, okay, I got it then. Like in health and food and those things?
Yeah, like categories.
Arts. Okay, got that.
And it, specialty manufacturing or advanced manufacturing is technologically rich manufacturing. So trying to connect our very significant manufacturing past with the trend in current and future manufacturing investment.
So would that be things that require a lot of space?
Indeed, they could require a lot of space as industrial developments. It just depends on what's being manufactured. Many products can be manufactured in an advanced format. It's more how the business does its work rather than what product you're focused on. But many manufacturing plants do take a lot of space.
I'm still not clear about advanced.
Well, I'll throw out an example, but I don't want you to think that's the only thing we could be working on. Like a solar manufacturer has to manufacture sensitive electronic component in a very controlled environment using significant technology. And you could do the same thing with a toy, but certainly solar would be a good example.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Christine, followed by George.
Well, first, thank you so much for both of the reports, because, and ditto to students about, you know, I agree with the second summit to see where we are and where we're going, because times are changing on a daily basis. I'm very excited at the idea of doing school districts, because for some reason, one, you end up with displaced workers that don't have hardly any skills that are going to translate into particularly what's new, which is technology. So there's nothing left in the world that doesn't involve technology. I don't care what you're doing anymore. That we have to be able to address that issue, or you have workers that are too far behind. And two is that the schools, I just listened to Nancy Golden yesterday, is extraordinarily inspiring, and they have even started a middle school initiative to take a look at skills, because it's never too young, because even our kids coming out now, it takes forever to get Ashley into a career. So you can get out of high school and still not have enough skill sets, but what you're waiting another 5 years or more to be able to do something productive or to get into what would be considered the career you want to be into. So I'm very excited about that, and working with the chambers and all of those other to try and address those small businesses that are so busy all day long that this sounds like a great idea, but it's an acronym to them right now. So however we can, you know, we as elected officials can help with the certificate and getting the word out, because we see lots of businesses all the time, is help make that happen in our daily conversations. So to help make it easier for you to get the word out.
Okay, and George followed by Rob.
Thank you, Steph. Yeah, I just want to kind of reiterate what Councillor Taylor said. And I had this thought when I was reading this material the last couple of evening about growing tomorrow's talent. And the certification idea, I think, is really good. I think that would be very useful for small
thrilled about the efforts of the Regional Food Consortium. In 2009, commissioners commissioned a study to look at some of these issues and not only where we were, where we might be able to go. And one of the things we learned that back in the late 50s and early 60s, regionally, we produced, grew, processed, consumed about 50% of our own food and the resulting impacts on our economy. People got to eat. As fairly recently, we were down to about 3% of what we consumed, grew, et cetera. And we learned from that study, if we can raise just by 1%, we get a boost of $11.7 million to our local food
appreciate Michael as well, the matrix here. I'm gonna take a moment to beat a familiar drum for some of my colleagues from Eugene as it revolves around strategy number four, land and physical infrastructure. Now, one of the things that I notice here is that with the brownfields portion of that, there's a good deal of specific information about efforts that are underway. And then on the portion, at least for the city of Eugene, where we have the issue of land supply, it mentions that there have been some specific calculus considered during the Envision Eugene process. When we've had these discussions at council, I've thought we've had room for growth with regard to the metrics and the connection between land supply issues and regional economic development issues. I know that Springfield and the county have done a lot of work here and have had some good success. I know I've felt disappointed, however, in the fact that some of our key industrial groups in Eugene have lost ground a little bit in the last several years, in large part due to a lack of land supply. So my question, I suppose, is two things. What can we do to get more in the way of connected metrics, mm-hmm. measuring regional economic development needs with regard to the city of Eugene's land supply and aligning those very closely in the discussion, as well as I'd love to hear more from Eugene staff about the sort of things we're doing to interact with our regional partners, because I know that, as I mentioned, Springfield and Lane County have a lot of work. I know we're going to talk about Glenwood in a bit, but I was wondering if we could get more of a discussion of that, the specifics. Michael or Sarah?
No, I can comment on that a little bit. As Envision Eugene's gone forward, and part of the presentation, we
celebration of Luanda High School graduates. And we used to have a 1,000 club at Luanda High School for kids who scored 1,000 or better on their SATs. They had to throw that away. Kids are doing so much better these days on their SATs, on their ACTs, whatever tests they may do. Our schools are not. I disagree with people who say our schools are not doing a good job and that our schools aren't able to attract people to this community, to stay in this community. They are doing a good job.
Okay, and then Kim?
I just wanted to ask Mike a question. I know a while back I read in a publication that the spin-offs from the university research had moved in the last few years, like from 2 to 17, but I don't know how accurate that is. Whether we have more than that, but I just think that was an important piece of information.
You know, I wish I recalled anything economic about that, and I don't right at the moment, but the number is accurate as I recall. 17 recent spin-offs from the university, some of which appeared in bits and pieces during the slideshow. Forgenics was a company that they do some genetic manipulation of plant materials. Actually financed in part through the city of Eugene. Mito Sciences, which is a company a little bit like Molecular Pros, which became Life Sciences and such, doing same sort of research materials. And of course, the classic hairnet picture that we always have of Richard Geodesics that does the advanced brain scanning. There's a lot of really interesting things coming out of the university, and a lot of them are biomedical. And together with those small startups and with Molecular Pros that became Eugene, became Sciences, we are looked at as being a focal point for biomedical industry in the state. It's not big at this point, but it's bigger than any place else in the state, and it has huge promise.
So before we just let go of that conversation, I just want that to be part of this conversation and a future summit, because I think it's really important that in just a few years we've gone from two spinoffs that stayed in our community and provide jobs and move us forward to 17. Now we need to keep on going, and we need to figure out how to be good partners to do that. We've been trying to do that, but I think it's we have the university is a huge part of our economic engine here, and we just need to maximize and realize as much of that for our communities.
Okay, Sherry, and then back to George.
Well, I appreciate, too, the presentation, and I'm aware that we're really focusing on business and worker training and that sort of thing, but I'm thinking that maybe there's another prong that we might look at, or I would like information about. It has to do with our homeowners and the default process that's taking place in our, and talking about tax base, property tax base. What are we doing to help those homeowners who are underwater, who are struggling to maintain their homes? And I know there are programs out there, and I guess I'm uninformed about a lot of the programs that are there. It would just be, I think, valuable for us as these local jurisdictions to know what those programs are. I see that we're making loans to businesses, startups, and, you know, are we doing? I know that we are. What can we do more to help the people who do live in the area and who are struggling to stay in their homes, and you know what that does for us as a community if we can maintain home ownership? And so I don't know exactly where that comes, but it would be interesting if in our next meeting we could have some information. Is that a possibility about all the different programs that are out there? I know that NCA is a state program.
Well, Mike, and I think we have our housing policy board, and we have, I would say, the experts right on that group, whether it's Stephanie or, Stephanie or Kevin Coe, and I maybe on the second summit, I think that would be worthwhile, and if you have more to add, I mean, I'd appreciate it. I think that'd be worthwhile maybe just having that conversation about what's going on in the local, and of course, Senator Merkley, this is high on his radar. I know that, so.
I would just point out that both cities have finance programs,
right,
to help prospective homeowners become homeowners. And the structure of those loans are soft enough, positive enough, that it helps people have a more firm position as a homeowner rather than being
say that high?
4.5, well, you know, from 5.9.
Practically giving it away.
But I just think, you know, an awareness of what the local banks are even, and, you know, credit unions are being willing to do to help people out would be worthwhile, and something that we as government officials need to promote. This is happening in our area. This is the positive, you know, things that are happening to help homeowners stay in their homes.
George?
Thanks. I just had a question. You know, we adopted this plan about 2.5 years ago, and the goal is for 20,000 new jobs. And I'm wondering, are we kind of like keeping count of how are we doing with the plan? How many, is there any idea of how many new jobs have actually been added since then?
Well, it's actually, there are three goals, and one is the new jobs, one is the wage-related goal, and the other is the unemployment goal. Happy to report that from time to time, our unemployment rate has dipped below that of the state, so we, you know, from time to time achieve that goal, but that's a bouncing ball.
Right.
We are in, as you might be aware, a very unstable economic time, so if you look at total jobs in the county region, the total labor force in the region has declined. And that's not a minor decline, it's a pretty significant decline. So what we can do as jurisdictions, I believe, is we can, you know, as the commissioner was pointing out, we can try to have as a fertile ground for the growth of business, be it local or be it people coming in. We can do everything possible to put resources on the table. We can look at our regulatory environment, and we can assist the best we can. We can't create jobs. So we are, per se, we can support, but we can't actually create them. A lot of work has happened. Over 1,000 people have been affected by the RPI. About 500 jobs have been created by loan programs. There's a good amount of activity going on, but the rest of the regional picture has not been that strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I understand that. I was just wondering if there was, you know, that is a goal, and so we look at all the economic things happening and take everything into account and go, oh, well, there's actually 500 more, you know, if you divide the 20 years by, or 10 years by 20, it should be 2,000 a year. Of course, that won't be that, but there seems to be like we need to have some kind of a base, just a base to see if our strategies are being ultimately being successful. And yes, you're correct that the government really can't create the jobs, but we set the table for the entrepreneurs and the businesses. Okay, thanks.
If there's nothing else, I have a quick question for Robin. And that is, on the Certified Work Ready Community Initiatives, I guess what I'm curious about, you know, because we talk about bringing the jobs in, but we can't forget about are the people who actually build the structures. So I'm going to focus on the trades and on that piece of it, because we're going to need people who are welders, people who can pound nails. And for me personally, and others, there's some others here in this room, you know, I grew up around a wood products family and construction, and you know, I can't say right now, it's not legal for a 13 or 14-year-old to run a skill saw, but I did, and because it was my dad's company. Or drive a truck at 14, I did. It was illegal, but, you know, it was around our ranch. And so it's the trades. So how does this possibly fit in with the trades? And you know, could you maybe expand on potentially the focus on that and what that will do for our community? Absolutely. You betcha.
Yeah, and I think one of our new approaches at Language Force Partnership is a sector approach, and manufacturing is going to be one of our focus areas here. We'll be integrating the National Career Readiness Assessments into and working with pre-apprenticeship programs and kind of creating like a career pathway concept. Once we can get people into our centers and testing, they are able to access a whole variety of career services, and we do let them know about these high-wage, high-demand occupations
manufacturing is not what we think about 50 years ago. I mean, I remember going through the IP, it's now IP, I still call it Weyerhaeuser, but the IP facility in Springfield and manufacturing, but yet you can eat off the floor. So, I mean, it's really in highly high-tech, very technical, all computerized. And so that's manufacturing today.
Absolutely. And the skills required are much higher. It's
absolutely
not the bronze level anymore. It's, you have a silver and gold with those higher level technical and problem solving critical thinking skills that are required. I wanted to add one thing, just I was in the midst of mentioning Lane Livability Consortium has supported our community work readiness initiative in a planning grant, and so that is where some of our initial startup funding is coming from.
Very good. So Joe, and then we're so short on time now, and so I think what I need to ask the body right now is if some of you or all of you can stay beyond 1:30, because I don't know how long, Mark, you'll need, but I'm sure there's going to be questions on this as well. So
just a quick comment on that and making connections too. Have you reached out to, I know that actually Sid had mentioned about manufacturing some of the skills-based learning, and we're looking at some of the trades. Have you reached out to the union halls that actually have their own classes? And I spent some time at Portland looking at some of those, and they're just fantastic schools. But some of the trades training here, because our schools aren't providing carpentry and welding and all that type of stuff.
Right, yes, absolutely. We do have union representatives, labor representatives on our board and on all of our planning committees, and they are integrated into our system. And that's where that free apprenticeship program
right.
Geared toward high school youth came out of. It's, we need to build that pathway to to the trades starting in high school and earlier.
That's going to be huge in the future.
Okay, well, again, Mike, Robin, thank you very much. Great presentation, and thank you for answering the questions. And I think we're pretty excited to potentially have a summit too here. So, all right. So next topic, Goshen, and so I think Alex is going to introduce it, and we'll hear from Mark Rust from Wayne County.
Thank you, Chair Lincoln. I just ask people to. I've got a couple of brief comments to introduce Mark. If you take a look at this Goshen regional context map, I think it we're doing a nice job of illustrating the comments that I wanted to make, which is that, you know, as we look, and Mark will talk specifically about the Goshen plan, but I wanted to give councilors and commissioners a sense of some of the things that are happening around Goshen that I think are important. Starting
thank you. And I am Mark Rest, working for Lane County. I appreciate your time today. I'm going to try and fire through this pretty quick here and then leave some time at the end for questions. We are working on this specific plan. It's just a part of how to hopefully implement the larger regional economic prosperity of our area and provide more jobs. So the mission that I was given by the Board of County Commissioners back in February of last year was to explore ideas of to create more jobs or how can we more fully utilize the existing industrial land that's in Goshen today. There is a community boundary to Goshen. It's a fairly defined area and a significant amount of industrial land that we'll see in a few minutes. But I'm going to talk about the policy framework that we feel supports this idea and then go into a little bit of the detail of the plan itself. So one of the first places we looked for guidance for this idea was the Oregon Statewide Planning Program. It really has been primarily a land use planning project to this point, although there's a significant amount of overlap into the economic development as well. But Goal 9 for the state talks about economic development. The need, you saw a little bit about the Oregon Business Plan in the previous presentation, but the Oregon Business Plan does identify the need to make industrial land ready to support and create new jobs. And specifically, the county with Goshen is looking at how to focus on preserving the large industrial sites that are in Goshen today that are served by rail, to preserve those for job creation in for some needs that may not otherwise be able to be met in the area. This is a map from the Oregon Employment Department. It's showing projected payroll out to 2020. But what I think it highlights is really beyond the Portland metro area, Lane County is the area that's anticipated to grow. The blue shade you see is over 18% growth for employment out to 2020. So I think, as you all know, it's critical to plan for that. This is the Oregon Business Plan. It was a collaboration between public and private sector leaders in trying to identify how to improve Oregon's economy. And I have a couple of slides here that have a number of quite a few words on them, but I just wanted to highlight a couple things that this Oregon Business Plan focused in on the limitations of land supply for industrial land and the lack of supply being one of the key issues on how to create more jobs region-wide. I'm again going to try and hurry through this so we have some time. The region-wide opportunity is addressed in the Oregon Business Plan and even specific to the Willamette Valley, Southern Willamette Valley. And this regional prosperity plan you just heard a fair amount of bit about. This is the goal that Mike broke out for you a little bit, but and I'm highlighting the piece about the chosen economic opportunity areas. This regional economic opportunity plan identified the key strategies, and again, Mike discussed that. We're focusing on these two, and that is to provide for the basic business needs and strengthen the key industries. To do those, that regional plan talks about tactics and the tactics to meet those strategies. So some of the tactics that we pulled out of that plan in support of Goshen are dealing with meeting the business infrastructure, encouraging development, and strengthening the links between land use, transportation infrastructure, and economic development. Again, I mentioned this has primarily been a land use project so far, moving into the economic development realm and a fair bit of overlap, but we're trying to strengthen those links both between the land use and the economic development. These are the key industries that we just talked about a little bit ago, and we're focusing on the middle one there, the advanced manufacturing. There was some question about what exactly is advanced manufacturing. This highlights that it's really technologically rich. Even in Goshen today, Goshen's primarily been wood products manufacturing and timber related in the past. Even that sector of manufacturing has moved into more of an advanced manufacturing realm with the automation that's occurred in that type of industry. This graph shows, again, this is from Oregon Economic Development Department, the blue line on this graph is the manufacturing employment in the whole state of Oregon. And you can see the drastic drop there, even just in 5 years, losing 7,700 manufacturing jobs. And excuse me, this is specific to Lane County, this is not statewide. So that's a really tough hit, as you all know, again, to our county. So moving down to the Lane County strategic plan, the Board of County Commissioners adopted a new strategic plan this year, and one of its goals is to look at how to transform Goshen to create more jobs. There's some more specifics to it, and I can talk more about that, but really developing a plan based on that goal. I call it the planning hurdle of what really the Goal 14 exception process that we've initiated at this point is designed to do is lift what's existing today in Goshen is a 40,000 square foot building size limitation. So through the Goal 14 exception, we hope to lift that building size limitation that will open up more opportunity to create a higher density and higher numbers of jobs in that community. There's multiple steps beyond what I think is this first initial step of the Goal 14. We've initiated the regionally significant industrial area process, which I'll talk about in a second, but then multiple steps beyond these that will go on into the future. You'll see the list there. So the primary historical uses of Goshen have been the timber-related and manufacturing. This is also a graph showing the drastic decline in that manufacturing. So why are we looking at Goshen? What's unique about it? We feel it's very unique, especially in the region, but even statewide. One of the key things is that it's already existing industrial land. There's over 300 acres of existing industrial zoning. The key transportation infrastructure that's there today, it's rail served. It has great highway access to I-5, Highway 58, and Highway 99. There's a lot of other infrastructure in place, and also the proximity to the Eugene-Springfield metro area and the educational facilities that are in the region. So this is a map of the existing zoning for Goshen. You can see the community boundary itself goes around this area, the colored area on the map. All the red is the existing industrial zoning. Like I said, there's over 300 acres there. We do intend to try and lift that 40,000 square foot building size, focus on the manufacturing that's already allowed there today. And really, we see this as a key to preserve those large sites. We've identified and put forth in a draft code that's at our planning commission right now in a public hearings process, some language to identify and define what can be termed as rail-dependent and rail-supportive uses. The Planning Commission hearings process has been going on the majority of this year. I think we're into our third or fourth continued hearing, and we'll be meeting back with our Planning Commission November 13th. Prior to initiating any of this, we held a series of open houses out in the community of Goshen over the course of 2011, really just taking them initially a very general idea of what the Board of Commissioners asked us to look at and then help define and develop the plan from the ground up. Ultimately, then, we hope to move it on to the Board of County Commissioners, hopefully early next year. This is a proposed zoning map for the community of Goshen. We're proposing to essentially create two separate areas. I'll just highlight a couple quick things on the map. I don't have my pointer, but Highway 99 runs north-south through the community. The darker blue on the map on the west side of Highway 99 are the large sites. There's basically two large mill sites, this northern site and this southern large mill site. The railroad runs parallel to Highway 99 on the west side of Highway 99. This is I-5 along the east side of the community. And then this shade of green is what we're proposing to be a more light industrial. And those are somewhat more parcelized properties today, although there's a fairly significant large vacant, about 28-acre site here owned by one owner that we feel has a lot of opportunity as well. So moving on from the Goal 14 exception process, the other piece, the second step that I identified was the regionally significant industrial area. That's a designation that's allowed under the Senate Bill 766. It promotes industrial development, tries to create above average wage jobs. There's a lot of attributes about that criteria for the designation that we've put forward to the state. We're actually going to Salem next week to be in front of the body that will make that determination, making our case of how we feel that meets those criteria for the designation. And so I pretty much mentioned some of these next steps, but the regionally significant designation and then moving forward to the Goal 14, moving it on to our Board of County Commissioners ultimately. And then beyond that, beginning or continuing discussions about urban renewal district, enterprise zone potential, then into the infrastructure feasibility studies. We've applied for a grant last year. We applied for another grant this year. We have yet to hear back about that grant, but looking at doing sewer feasibility study work for Goshen and also working closely with ODOT on transportation issues. Alex mentioned some of that. We've had conversations with LCC and LTD and a lot of other folks. So at this point, I'm open. I think we left a few minutes for questions, or I'm happy to talk further about anything else.
So, Rob?
Thank you, and thanks for the report, and I'm glad that we have this in our county strategic plan. We did a lot of work on this, and I'm glad to see it moving forward. I do want to point out one concern I have about the Goal 14 exception, which is the foundation of this proposal, and it's likely that that exception would be successfully challenged. However, 1,000 Friends of Oregon and others have pointed out a legal way to develop Goshen using the unincorporated communities rule, and I know that 1,000 Friends and others have worked or met with various county commissioners and staff to point this out regarding this option, so I hope we'll consider this so that we can continue to move expediently on this. Thanks.
Fane, just for the folks to know, I really give this to Faye. This is kind of Faye's brainchild, and I remember when he first broached this to me, I was still in my second term as mayor. That's how long ago that was. So, Faye, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to say thanks for all the work to this point. As Commissioner Handy has indicated, there has been some suggestions by other folks of different approaches to accomplish the same thing. The first effort was around an existing statute. That's the diminished mill site statute. And we have thoroughly investigated that and questioned whether or not we can meet the criteria under the state law, because the property is
can create a vision of what it is you would like to see happen there, and then the hope that people will latch onto that idea and move in the direction that you want instead of in the direction you'd rather they don't do. So I do think there is value in trying to at least let people know if you had your best outcome, what that would look like.
Question, because Hillary brought up the HUD grant, otherwise known as Lane Livability Consortium, and is the Goshen site in any way connected to, because that's the one where we're going to look at brownfields, and we're not that this is brownfield, but that we're looking at, you know, we have some dollars there to look at planning. Is that in any way? So that we're connecting those, because that's supposed to be where we're taking all of these ideas and putting them together, hopefully, and not not duplicating things.
So much of the work for the Lane Livability Consortium is not site specific,
mm-hmm.
and so, but for example, the Brownfield Assessment is a place where there is a potential connection. So as we all know, the Brownfield grant is just getting started. They're in the assessment phase. We're starting to identify which sites would be included in that assessment. And so the county is a partner in that, and they will provide input in terms of the sites that they would like to see identified.
Oh, absolutely. And certainly there was no specific site in mind when we started the grant process, but Goshen had been talked about and all had thought that this potential place for brownfields investigation, just because of its history. Might not be pertinent out there, but
I would just like to encourage it in some way, since we all, you know, are participating in that particular process, if we could make use of it somehow and make sure it doesn't get set to the side.
Yes. And Lane County at the table of every single project management team meeting, you know, and so part of my goal is thinking about how can we best make sure that we're working together to leverage this resource to advance all of the goals. And so together with all the members of the PMT, we're figuring that out step by step.
Alex?
The grant does sort of have a boundary of the metropolitan organization within that, at least within all the properties that Mark showed you are actually within that boundary. So in terms of the applicability of the grant, it's certainly not excluded due to any sort of geographic consideration.
Okay, great.
If there's not anything else, then I really, again, want to thank you all for the presentations. And as far as Goshen's concerned, remember, this is about land that maybe companies, instead of going to China or Malaysia, can actually site here. So let's not forget about that. Anyway, I want to thank you all, and so Lane County Board of Commissioners is